Artificial intelligence, facial recognition, lightning-fast networks. They're here today. They are upending companies, transforming the consumer experience, and challenging the way that lawmakers craft policy. The pace of technological change is dizzying. So how are some of the world's leading companies orienting themselves in this new world? Stay tuned for an upcoming special branded episode of Global Translations, brought to you by Citi.
What would happen if the United States and China, the world's two technology superpowers, decided to square off in a battle for the future of the internet?
Canada is really finding itself to be the victim of unintended consequences.
Laura Dawson is a trade expert, an economist, an expert on the Canada-U.S. relationship, and the head of the Canada Institute at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C.
So last December, December 2018, Meng Wanzhou, Madame Meng, I'll call her, who's the CFO of Huawei in China, she was arrested at Vancouver Airport.
The chief financial officer of Chinese tech company Huawei is under arrest in Canada. The U.S. Justice Department is reportedly investigating whether Meng violated trade sanctions against Iran.
Canada did what it always does, and it answered the phone when the U.S. Department of Justice called and said, hey, we've got this person, Meng Wanzhou. She's an executive with Huawei. We suspect that she's been engaging in various crimes, including trading with Iran. And so we would like you to pick her up and hold her, and we'll launch a formal extradition process. And Canada picked up the phone and said, yeah, we can do that.
Huawei is a leading Chinese tech company. For years, American lawmakers have warned that Huawei, along with other Chinese tech companies, should not be trusted. They claim that Huawei works closely with the Chinese government and that their equipment could be used to steal sensitive information, a claim that Huawei denies.
The United States has also been very clear with our security partners on the threat posed by Huawei.
Nothing Chinese firms do can be independent of the state.
Huawei is something that's very dangerous.
Those warnings worked. Huawei doesn't really have a presence in the United States, but globally, they're the largest suppliers of telecommunications equipment in the world. They're also a leading provider of smartphones, in direct competition with tech giants like Samsung and Apple. The company recorded $105 billion in sales last year. But recently, it found itself dragged into the ongoing trade war between the United States and China. To some, the arrest of the Huawei CFO is collateral damage.
So China's response was swift, sharp, highly politicized. The first thing they did was arrest two Canadians, one a former diplomat, one a Canadian businessman, on charges that everyone agrees are fairly trumped up. One is Michael Spavor, one is Michael Kovrig. So those two Canadians were immediately apprehended, and I understand that they're still being held in confinement conditions, very difficult conditions.
And is there any sign from the Canadian government that they're going to let up and let Ms. Meng go in exchange for freedom for these two Canadians?
Yeah, if you talk to, you know, the average Canadian on the street, they're like, why are we doing this? Why are we doing President Trump's dirty work and we're being penalized, stuck in the middle of all this? Why don't we just let her go?
Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau asked President Trump to raise the issue of the detained Canadians with Chinese President Xi Jinping at the G20 meeting in late June. But it's unlikely that China would release the two Michaels without some sort of resolution on the fate of the Huawei CFO. President Trump has spent the last few months ramping up his remarks about Huawei.
Major developing story out of the White House, President Trump signing an executive order that effectively blacklists Chinese telecom giant Huawei.
The U.S. has lobbied allies in Europe to ban Huawei from building emerging 5G networks.
But at the G20, Trump seemed to walk back his previous statements on Huawei.
U.S. companies can sell their equipment to Huawei.
So what exactly is the message here?
It's very confusing to the allies because it's not like you're dealing with one United States. You're dealing with multiple messaging from the United States. I mean, Canada's got the Department of Justice saying, follow the rule of law on the extradition request. And then it's got the security community in the United States saying, be very, very cautious with Huawei. Follow our lead. Keep away from them on 5G. And then you've got a president who's saying, oh, you know, maybe we should do business with Huawei. Maybe they're not so bad. Maybe we should get rid of this case against Meng. Maybe we should do a trade deal with them. So which United States are the allies supposed to believe?
From Politico, this is Global Translations. I'm Louisa Savage. We're tackling technological disruption in our next few episodes and the race between the U.S. and China for supremacy in wireless technology and artificial intelligence and in who controls the values that will be the basis for the next generation of technology. This is really what's at the heart of the great rebalancing in the U.S.-China relationship that we've been exploring in this podcast. And we've seen that it has great consequences for the rest of the world. I'm here now with Nancy Scola, Politico's senior technology reporter. Nancy's going to help us navigate these issues on the future of the internet and what the race to control it between the U.S. and China means for the rest of the world. Nancy, great to see you.
It's good to be here, Louisa.
So, Nancy, we heard from Laura Dawson about how Canada got itself caught between the U.S. and China with the arrest of the Huawei CFO. And of course, this is all happening parallel to the U.S. trade war. But I think to really understand what's going on and why this is such a big deal, we need to pull back the lens a little bit and talk about the technology that has everyone so anxious, because it has to do with the future of the internet. And the technology is called 5G. And this is where I need you to help me, Nancy. What is 5G?
So 5G is new technology that's going to make your cell phone super fast.
Okay, impress me. How fast?
Well, think about it this way. With 5G, you could download a two-hour movie in less than 4 seconds.
I think my nine-year-old would love that. But what else could we do that would be useful with it?
So if we get speeds up to 100 times faster, it makes all sorts of new things possible. Doctors can conduct surgeries using robots from across the country. We can have self-driving cars that can respond instantly to road conditions.
Okay, so this is why people talk about 5G introducing the so-called fourth industrial revolution, the idea that everything from healthcare to the electrical grid is going to be transformed.
That's right. And some experts actually think that the impact on the world of 5G could be as powerful as the introduction of electricity.
So this is something that the U.S. government is clearly paying attention to.
Yeah, and that's in part because there's a huge national security aspect to this. So in this hyper-connected world, we'll also be more vulnerable to cyber attacks. And that's why experts say it's really important we get that right the first time.
And presumably there's a big economic angle here for the government as well.
Absolutely. Whoever wins this race to 5G will have access to billions of dollars in revenue and widespread job creation. 5G is supposed to be that powerful.
So whichever country comes to dominate this technology will have a lot of control.
They'll have control over writing the rules for the next generation of the internet.
Okay, so with basically the fate of the universe at stake here, who's in charge of 5G?
So one agency that's playing a huge role is the Federal Communications Commission. This is a once obscure agency that sets the rules of the road for things like radio and TV. And now they're playing a major role in the future of 5G. The FCC is headed up by a guy named Ajit Pai, a one-time FCC staffer who's now leading the agency. And he's known for showing up at FCC monthly meetings carrying a Reese's peanut butter coffee mug the size of his head.
I guess he really likes his caffeine.
He does.
You a coffee aficionado?
I do. He walked me through what's at stake in this future where everything is connected by 5G.
Most consumers have a cell phone, and if they do, they are aware of 4G LTE, which is the current wireless standard that allows you to make phone calls, surf the internet, and more. 5G is the next generation of wireless connectivity, the fifth generation, and it promises speeds that are 100 times faster than the 4G speeds that we get today.
How will daily life change for the average consumer when 5G is fully deployed?
I think the most immediate impact will be faster speeds and less latency. Latency is the responsiveness of the network. If you click on a link on your phone, the network will respond much quicker to load up the page that you're looking for. In terms of the applications that we might see in our daily lives, we can imagine all kinds of things. Telemedicine, for example, being able to use these wireless networks to transmit information, health information, quicker and faster to allow your physicians to intervene if something is going wrong. Precision agriculture, making our farms and ranches much more effective. Other kinds of applications that essentially make all the devices around us connected to the internet. This is what is commonly known as the Internet of Things. All things from cars to refrigerators being connected. And that's a tip of the iceberg, I think. It's still in the early days, of course, so we can't foresee all of the applications and services that will be offered. But we do know there's going to be a transformative effect on how we live, how we work, and how we play.
In Washington today, it seems like you can't go 10 minutes without hearing somebody talk about 5G, even outside the halls of the FCC. Why is why does it elicit such a strong response from government leaders and also people in industry?
We think that 5G could be transformative for our economy. And that's the number one reason I think that many policymakers are interested in it. The other one is the security aspect. We don't operate in a vacuum, of course. In a global economy, we have global competitors. And some of those competitors, in particular China, saw the success that the United States had in 5G, in 4G rather, and they want to claim that success for 5G. And that's one of the reasons why policymakers are intrigued by the FCC's 5G fast plan, and they want to promote U.S. leadership, is that they understand that to the extent that this innovation economy grows outside of our shores, that is a significant opportunity lost. When it comes to the development of this technology, there are no Republicans, there are no Democrats. They're simply an American priority, and we want that innovation and investment to happen here in America.
What is it about 5G that has both Democrats and Republicans unified, besides the fact that it promises such huge economic returns?
So there's a shared belief that China isn't playing fair in the global marketplace, and that the major economic growth we've seen in China in recent years hasn't also been accompanied by major political reforms.
If you want to trust that a company subject to Chinese jurisdiction won't comply with a request from the Chinese intelligence services, That's your choice, but it's not a choice that I believe is a wise one when it comes to our national security here in the United States.
A lot of the work of recent generations, especially in Washington, D.C., has been bringing China into sort of the democratic orbit, right? Trying to sort of push them along the axis to embrace Western values. Do you worry at all by isolating them in the tech landscape? We talk about tariffs that President Trump has imposed. Many of those are driven by technology and concerns about Huawei. Is there any risk of isolating China in a way that sort of drives them outside of that democratic orbit?
I don't think so. I mean, if that was the original purpose 20 years ago, I think it's quite clear that that purpose has failed. And I think it's part of the reason why you see a bipartisan recognition that not just the president, but Senate Minority Leader Schumer has been in favor of a fundamental rethink about how that relationship should play out. From my own perspective, I'll simply say that I believe that everybody should play by the rules, that we don't want to see any government directing investment or subsidizing domestic competitors or essentially affecting the forced technology transfer from foreign companies to benefit their own companies. I mean, I think that's the baseline expectation of any country that is a member of the WTO or otherwise participates in the global marketplace, and especially when it comes to something like technology. I think it's important for everybody to operate on the same assumptions and play by the same rules.
So China sort of did this to themselves.
Well, I certainly think they've taken advantage of the general laissez-faire free market system that the WTO and other similar processes afforded them. And I think over the last couple of years, what has become clear is that it's not exactly fair for one country to directly subsidize its own national champions to do some of the other things they've done and essentially outcompete on something that on the basis of something other than the quote-unquote merit or the inherent market appeal of a technology.
We've spent many years talking about technology being wonderfully borderless, global, sort of bringing together the world community. Do you worry at all that sort of now that we're injecting global politics into these technology debates that we risk sort of splintering the technology landscape?
I guess the one thing I might quibble about in your question is the tense. It is not that we have injected. I think, unfortunately, other governments have essentially tried to do that on their own. For example, we consistently hear about foreign governments shutting down services altogether within their borders. China in particular has essentially tried to create its own internet economy, shutting out companies, especially companies from the United States, from entering the market or entering on neutral terms. A lot of companies, for American firms that enter that market, have to license their technologies and also have to have a majority owner who is Chinese itself. And then ultimately, that technology is, you know, essentially misappropriated or stolen or otherwise used to benefit a domestic company. In addition, China itself benefits its own, subsidizes its own national champions.
National champions, that's an idea we heard about in the trade chapter of the show. National champions are Chinese companies that have been singled out by the Chinese government as part of their strategic vision. These are companies that are going to be nurtured and helped along to become big global success stories.
They're singled out for benefits and subsidies and access to special financing. And like Chairman Pai mentioned, the concept of national champions has drawn the ire of the international community because it makes fair competition more difficult.
Exactly, and it doesn't help Huawei when one of the biggest criticisms against the company in the West is that it unfairly gets a leg up from this very close relationship with the Chinese government.
So how did China come to have the most advanced and fastest moving 5G company?
So China under President Xi Jinping has really focused on this idea of no longer just building components for the rest of the world. They want to be a technology leader. It's a personal focus of his that he's made very clear in recent years.
And what does that strategy look like in practice?
So I put that question to someone I think could answer it better.
I'm Zen Su, a technology reporter at the South China Morning Post.
Zen walked me through her understanding of President Xi's ambitions for China's burgeoning tech sector.
When Xi Jinping came into power in 2012, that was really also when he started putting a lot of emphasis on boosting China's tech sector, you know, to catch up with the West. So he's also put into place the Made in China 2025 plan back in 2015. Then that plan was really aimed at closing the gap with Western sort of high-tech prowess and sort of lessening China's dependency on imported technology in areas including stuff like robotics and biopharma and, you know, aviation aerospace equipment.
And so I followed up by asking Zen, what makes President Xi different than some of his predecessors? She mentioned that President Xi really embraces this idea that China is fully a global superpower, right? And it's time for China to start embracing that role on the world stage, throwing its weight around a bit, and even starting to demand some concessions from other countries, including the United States.
When Xi Jinping came into power, basically, China sort of adopted like a very different kind of foreign policy. In a sense, it started seeing itself as like a large country, like a superpower. So it started behaving as such. And so when that happened, naturally, I think they want to also advance in technology in terms of AI, where it doesn't want to be lagging behind countries like the US anymore. He is slightly different from his predecessors in that there is this huge sort of emphasis on wanting China to achieve core competencies in really essential technologies so, you know, so as to reduce reliance on the US technology, for example.
Coming up, the unintended consequences of America's confrontation with China over the future of 5G. More in a moment.
Nearly 90% of executives surveyed by MIT and Deloitte say digital disruption is coming for their companies. So what's it like running a 200-year-old financial services firm while confronting and embracing today's rapid shifts in technology? One thing is certain, you can't bank on yesterday's success.
We are in an extinction phase. There's no doubt about it. When technologies change and, you know, when human behavior changes to the extent that is occurring right now in 2019, if you can't meet those expectations, then, you know, you become obsolete.
The pace of change is only speeding up. 90% of the world's data has been created in the last 2 years. There are now more mobile phone connections than people. And consumers have doubled the interactions with brands on mobile devices than anywhere else, according to Google. Stephen Bird, the CEO of Citi's Global Consumer Bank, sees those trends, and he's formed a singular mission: make the bank forward compatible.
What is it that makes a company forward compatible? You know, you have to create a new culture. We have to be able to shine a light on the potential to either grow in a successful way or go extinct. We have to bring in new talent, people who can come in and challenge us, challenge our model, and that's what I'm working on.
I'm Carol Zimmer. Stay tuned for our second branded installment of Global Translations, brought to you by our sponsor, Citi. We'll be looking at how consumer behavior, artificial intelligence, and faster networks are transforming companies and policy in this fiercely competitive world. We'll hear from Stephen Bird, the CEO of Citi's Global Consumer Bank, and Thomas Kurian, the CEO of Google Cloud. Look out for that episode on August 1st, wherever you listen to this podcast.
While President Trump and security officials talk a lot about keeping Huawei out of the U.S.'s 5G networks as a national security concern, there's another factor to consider.
There are not many companies in the world today that can offer 5G.
That's Yasheng Huang. He's a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Business and an expert on entrepreneurship in China.
5G is an incredibly powerful enabling technology. It is going to enable AI, autonomous driving, Internet of all things in a way that 4G doesn't, right? So by banning Huawei, we're also delaying the incredible promise of this technology. And I also would argue that we have ourselves to blame, right? So I would prefer a situation where you have a U.S. company that has also 5G technology that can actively compete with Huawei, and then you choose the U.S. Company. We didn't invest.
Professor Huang told me that Congress has repeatedly failed to invest in scientific research and development that would have helped propel 5G ahead, and that if you control for inflation, there's no real increase in federal spending on research beyond the Defense Department.
It's hard for me to see the logic of knocking down a Chinese company while the U.S. itself is not actively investing to create the next generation of technology.
And he had one more point.
And what's that?
That's that outside of the U.S., and especially in China, Huawei is a really well-liked company.
I believe that they made an extremely costly mistake by going after a company that has enjoyed widespread support from the Chinese consumers and has a piece of real technology that the rest of the world can benefit. So the Trump administration is antagonizing the Chinese public in a way that I think it's just not helpful to the long-run relationship between China and the United States.
When you talk about Huawei being the pride of the Chinese people, do you have a sense of what the significance of the company is to President Xi in particular? Or sort of like what spot does it occupy in his mind?
Well, I think instrumentally, it is serving his need perfectly, right? So he has always described himself as a champion of Chinese patriotism, nationalism, and now you have a U.S. government going after the pride of the Chinese business and technology and economy, all right? I think it plays right into his hands.
So by trying to knock Huawei and President Xi down, Trump is sort of galvanizing the Chinese people in his favor.
Exactly, and it's one of the many unintended consequences of this back and forth on Huawei. It's also been difficult for many companies based in the U.S., especially as Trump goes back and forth on how big of a threat to national security Huawei really is. Companies like Qualcomm and Intel sold billions of dollars worth of chips to Huawei. Google licensed the Android's App Store. All of this is in limbo now. His intention may have been to hurt China and Huawei, but you know the impact is more widespread.
But this isn't just a scare tactic, right? I mean, the U.S. is actively engaging with allies to make sure that Huawei doesn't play a role in the future of 5G.
It depends on who you ask. So some people think Trump is really just trying to put the screws to President Xi as part of the ongoing trade war. But it's not just Trump. The Senate Intelligence Committee has voiced bipartisan support for blocking Huawei and other Chinese telecommunications companies from participating in this push to 5G. Here's what Secretary of State Mike Pompeo had to say.
What's imperative is that we share with them the things we know about the risks that Huawei's presence in their networks presents.
I went to the State Department here in Washington, D.C., and I spoke with Robert Strayer. He's the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Cyber, and a major part of his job is to go around the world and make sure that U.S. allies understand the U.S.'s stance on 5G and Huawei.
You know, so many people ask us, you know, have you seen a smoking gun? Where's the smoking gun? We'd say, well, counter to that, we say we really are looking at setting up a loaded gun. We think there's intent, capability, and opportunity in 5G that the Chinese could exploit.
So the United States, and you in particular, have spent recent months making this argument around the world that other countries need to be extremely concerned about Huawei's role in the deployment of 5G. Why have other countries not sort of embraced the American approach on this?
So everybody's on a learning path. We are the ones who have been talking to them more about the importance of looking at the supply chain and the ability of a third country like China authoritarian country to have an influence on the vendors for their supply chain. So more and more we're hearing countries say that we are concerned about the supply chain. Many countries now say that they would exclude Huawei from the core of their networks. They have a sufficient enough concern about the threat from China that they would do that. So we're on a learning path around the world. We're seeing that European Union and some other countries specifically say that the analysis of the risk to their system should include the influence by a third country.
From a layperson's perspective, it seems like it's not Huawei's decision-making that's the concern necessarily. They have to be responsive to the demands of the Chinese government. It seems like the resolution here in some ways might be that the Chinese government change its essential nature, become a different sort of style of government. Is there anything that a firm like Huawei can do to sort of alleviate some of the United States' concerns about the role that they're playing in 5G deployment?
So we are very concerned about the government, and we don't really see a distinction between the government and the company. I just note that if you even hear with the messaging that's coming out, it's almost the same message coming from the company, Huawei, and the government itself. So as the Communist Party directs all action of the government from the top, they also direct the activities of companies.
What do you make of the argument that, you know, China has long banned American companies like Google and Facebook, or tried to limit the deployment of companies like Google and Facebook inside mainland China? They make value-driven arguments, right? These companies are exporting Western values to our country. We don't want them here. There's also the more cynical take that they're, you know, keeping out these American Silicon Valley firms long enough till they can grow competitors in the sort of global marketplace. What do you make of sort of the counter-argument that the United States in some ways is doing the same thing, right? Let's keep Huawei out. They offer cheaper, pretty good technologies for 5G deployment. Let's keep them out long enough until we can sort of build up our own capacity on that front.
Right. So our decisions on this are totally based on what I think anyone around the world in a Western democracy would see as fundamental principles that should guide what we want to see in the way of technology development, which is the rule of law and fundamental human rights. We are keeping out or limiting the Chinese government's access to potentially corrupt our critical infrastructure, so to disrupt it, as well as to exfiltrate data back to Beijing. And in Beijing, we know that they've used the data to target the Uyghur population to basically try to wipe away an ethnic and a religious minority in their own country. They've also used for years cyber tools to go after dissidents, particularly Tibetan dissidents. So when we say that we want to be cautious about the introduction of an untrusted supplier like those that we see from China, we're doing that to protect fundamental human rights, which all democracies around the world embrace, and we think is something that they need to focus on.
And they're also trying to squeeze Huawei out of other countries as well, right?
Absolutely. So the United States is leaning pretty aggressively on countries like France and Germany to take a similar step in banning Huawei equipment from being integrated into their 5G networks. The administration has also floated this idea that if companies do choose to use Huawei equipment, the United States may no longer share intelligence information with them. Countries have reacted in various ways. Many of them have taken offense at the administration's sort of somewhat heavy-handed approach, somewhat aggressive approach in sort of dictating what other countries should do.
We are currently in the process of putting down on paper conditions/criteria.
So I spoke with Peter Beyer. He's a member of the German parliament and also serves in Chancellor Angela Merkel's cabinet as transatlantic coordinator. We talked about the approach that the Trump administration is taking on this and how the German officials are reacting.
What we think a company who want to participate in developing and implementing the 5G technology in Germany should comply with. So other than the Americans, some other countries' approach is when they said we don't want Chinese companies, and maybe even bluntly listing Huawei or ZTE. The German approach, as far as I see it, as most likely to come out of this process, which is still on its way, is that we write down criteria and said this and this needs to be complied with. And in the end, my best guess sitting here today is that it will be in the end a de facto exclusion of Chinese technology, of Chinese companies.
The Trump administration here in the United States just taking a slightly different approach, sort of like a top-down dictate, banning Huawei or attempting to ban Huawei, and sort of leaning on foreign governments, governments around the world to react in the same way. Is that creating a point of tension between the United States and Germany?
There are many examples around the globe of different ways of dealing with the situation. People in Germany, including the government and the parliament, didn't like the U.S. administration to write and, you know, make public these letters by the ambassador here to Germany, and that, you know, that they tell us what to do.
So the letter that Peter just mentioned is one that the U.S. ambassador to Germany, Richard Grenell, shared with German economic minister Peter Altmaier in March. And in that letter, the U.S. ambassador said that intelligence sharing between the two countries, the United States and Germany, could be at risk if Germany lets Huawei help build their 5G infrastructure.
Well, with regard to general transatlantic relations, we have some problems. But in the end, I mean, if you look what the interest is, we share the same interest as the Americans. And I have some understanding for the concern of sensitive intelligence and data. If we cooperate, which we are doing, the intelligence services between Germany and the United States of America, I think we both need that. Maybe even we intensify that. We need to rely that each other's data and intelligence is safe. So the Americans have a point there, but I totally disagree that you write this in a letter and make this public, and because it's too serious an issue. And we know what our security interests are, and we in Germany, we do it our own way, the way we described it earlier. And I personally told this Rick Grenell, the U.S. ambassador, and they know exactly how we want it goes, and that it is our own decision. But again, the interest, I totally understand that. The way to, you know, communicate that is something that we disagree.
It's a pretty big ask, right? Especially in Europe, where Huawei is pretty well established commercially.
It is. And part of the appeal of Huawei is they build cutting edge equipment that's fairly inexpensive. They built a lot of the 4G networks that countries in Europe depend on. So you're asking this, European nations not just to don't use one vendor, but to not use one vendor that offers a good product cheaply and that they've relied on in the past.
So, Nancy, in some ways, it seems like we're seeing the rise of almost two separate internets in the world, the American and the Chinese. Mm-hmm. And a lot of countries are getting caught in between the two. I mean, are there countries that are picking sides?
I think overall countries are really sort of in the decision-making part of this process. So they haven't necessarily figured out which direction they're going to go in. Are they going to side with the United States or are they going to side with China?
So all of this is unfolding now, but how long before we see a winner in this U.S.-China rivalry over 5G, Nancy?
So we'll have 5G's rollout in the United States in the next couple years. Who actually wins at building technologies that are powered by 5G, whether that's China or the United States? We're probably not going to know that for 5, 10, 20 years.
So who's going to win?
I think there's no question the United States is in the lead, in my view.
Well, Chairman Pai thinks it's going to be the United States.
But not everyone agrees, right?
That's right. So some people think that Ajit Pai and the FCC aren't being aggressive enough in opening up the radio waves that power 5G. Much of those radio waves are currently held by the federal government, agencies like the Defense Department.
Some people even say that China has a built-in advantage because of its centrally planned economy.
Absolutely. When you're trying to build a nationwide network, it can help to have a central government telling companies what to do. One way it's been described to me is think about the companies building out 5G right now as building a bunch of different garden hoses, when what the country really needs is a fire hose, and only the federal government is in position to build that.
And that's kind of how we built the highway system.
Exactly.
But that's not happening anytime soon.
Probably not. A proposal to do something similar was floated by someone in the Trump White House and was quickly shot down by everyone from the FCC to telecom companies.
And in the meantime, though, we're working on other emerging technologies, right, that will rely on 5G.
Absolutely. So artificial intelligence, another place that the U.S. is competing with China, is powered in many ways by 5G technology. If the U.S. wins, quote unquote, wins at 5G, that'll also give the United States an advantage when it comes to the rollout of artificial intelligence.
And that's exactly what we'll be talking about next time on Global Translations. Thanks, Nancy, for joining us, and I'm looking forward to hearing a lot more.
Thank you, Louisa.
Thanks to my colleague, Nancy Scola. Our producer is Patricia Jacob. We had help on this episode from Annie Reese and Jenny Ament. Dave Shaw is the executive producer of Politico Audio. I'm Louisa Savage. Global Translations is presented by Citi, a leading global bank. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and listen for a branded episode from Citi about some of these same themes coming Thursday, August 1st. Thank you and see you next week.